equilibrium position is in Perugia, Italy. This equilibrium position is where I swing with the highest velocity. And today I will speak about something related to graph and basically about building, let's say, quantum devices, like network devices, on some pertinent graph and looking for peculiar properties of these systems. In effect, this is the general title of my talk, and more specifically, I will be talking in general about inhomogeneous effects on networks of Josephson junction of cold atomic atoms, and at the end about some properties of spin models defined on conventional networks. So, by inhomogeneous network, I intend essentially a non-translational invariant network, and the inhomogeneities I will consider it will be essentially due either to topology, which means basically on a discrete structure on how the lattice sides are connected between each other, or to end to external fields applied pertinently to my network. The long-term goal of this research program is essentially to engineer quantum state and to induce desired macroscopic coherent behaviors just by fabricating devices with the available technologies on networks which have been selected because of their properties. And just this last part will be basically the main issue of this talk, which I will try to keep at most intuitive level. And then eventually there is need for more detailed discussion we can have afterwards. And for this purpose, for this long-term goal of this research, I will try to evidence the effect induced by the topology, meaning specific effects which are not observable, for example, on a square lattice or on a translational invariant Bravais lattice, on bosonic systems. And so I will concentrate my attention specifically to Josephson junction networks and to ultra-cold atomic gases on optical lattices. These are other new areas of research which started essentially the proposal on topological computation by Gitaev and has been carried by several people so far. And in effect, let me review just at a general level the kind of systems which I will be touching upon in this talk. First one is a very sophisticated planar Josephson junction network. Here we have some kind of Josephson junction located on a hexagonal lattice with a hole in between. It's typical in this system, the hole, because it is needed to be created by a magnetic field, pertinent magnetic field. What is the peculiarity of one configuration like this? Is the peculiarity that is one condensed matter realization of a system which realizes topological order, therefore which has a ground state which is highly degenerate and that is protected against noise and can be used according to the authors here. I'm mentioning work by Joffe and Dussault, basically, can be used to implement the Gitaev topological quantum computation scheme. I should also say that in order to look for topological order in Josephson junction networks, you have not to look at such complicated structures. Even a planar junction with pertinent, for example, toroidal boundary condition is a system which will have a ground state which is degenerate, and this degeneracy is protected by the boundary condition, therefore is protected because of topology. From a field theoretical point of view, I should mention these systems are also very interesting because they can be rather rigorously mapped into Chern-Simons theory, and therefore they can give rise to anionic excitations. Then, okay, there are other systems, for example, which I will consider, which are defined on this kind of lattice. This Acomb graph is one of the simplest inhomogeneous structures you can think of, and is inhomogeneous because basically on this line, which I will call the backbone, each point has four nearest neighbors, therefore has coordination number four, while on all the other lines, for example, this other line, which I will call later as fingers, on the fingers, the coordination number is two. Just because of that, this is a simple inhomogeneous structure on which I can do some exercises, for example. For example, one thing one can do is just consider three bosons hopping on a discrete structure which is designed in this way. What is so peculiar about three bosons hopping there? Everybody knows that as a consequence of the Mermin-Wagner theorem, three bosons cannot condense in dimension, in space dimension, which is lesser than two. What happens instead is that for, as a result of inhomogeneity, one can have a special condensation of bosons along the backbone. And as I will show briefly in the following, this is a consequence of the spectrum of the adjacency matrix of this kind of graph here. Now, this is in a very simple exercise, can be solved exactly, it's just a nice analytical proof. However, if one thinks that, for example, in Josephson junction networks, what is responsible of interesting phenomena are Cooper pairs, and if one thinks, okay, that Cooper pairs are bosons, I should say that this is a pictorial argument, obviously, because Cooper pairs are not quasi-particles. They are collective excitation. They cannot be treated as a particle. They only mean that there is that a fermion, two fermions are related because of the exchange of one photon. So it's something intrinsically very extended. However, if one pictorially thinks that those excitations are bosons, then one would expect, as a result of this exercise, that if I put a pertinent Josephson junction networks on this device, I could have an enhancement of the current along the backbone, just because there I accumulate more Cooper pairs, and a reduction of the current along the fingers. So I will be able to induce inhomogeneous transport properties in this system just by choosing the topology. This we will see that is possible, and we will discuss it more in detail in the following. Another example of inhomogeneous system is provided by a star-like configuration of this form. In this case, okay, you can have, for example, you have three lines merging into one center. The loop in the center is traded by a pertinent magnetic field. This can be either three quantum wires, for example, we saw three wires where fermions will hop, or for example, could be three Josephson junction arrays. In both cases, one configure this one dimensional, this particular one star shaped one dimensional system will exhibit a new fixed point in this physical diagram. And this new fixed point, it has very relevant properties in several respects, okay, because okay, it is totally unexpected to have finite coupling fixed point for a one-dimensional quantum wire. And then, okay, one can construct the system with cold atomic atoms. And finally, one can consider, for example, and that has been done in the past by Mathis, for example, classical statistical problem or quantum statistical problem defined on inhomogeneous lattices, like, for example, COMS or STAR. In this case, it's a book graph. And in this case, what we will see is that just the topology of this graph will induce the existence of some local orders along the backbone of the butcher, along the points where all the planes intersect. And this is somewhat related also to the phenomena which we observe in Josephson junction networks. So the plan of this talk, just to keep at a very, how can I say, general level, is that I will discuss in the first part an experimentally accessible system, which is inhomogeneous, and I will point out several properties which have been already observed in the system. And then I will briefly talk about spectral and thermodynamical properties of quantum particles and Josephson networks defined on comb or star-shaped graphs. And I will compare at the end results obtained from phenomenological models of these systems with what is available from experiments. And then I will investigate other two questions related to what can be relevant inhomogeneity effects in statistical mechanics model defined on non-translational invariant lattices. And for this purpose, I use the spherical model and Ising model as an illustrative systems, because okay, in spherical model one can exhibit an analytic solution, and the Ising model is interesting per se because it belongs to the universality class of a lot of relevant models in condensed matter theory. Then I will comment briefly on what one can expect about the entanglement properties of fermionic or spin model defined on this kind of inhomogeneous structure. Since I will be speaking often about Josephson junction, just this slide is a simple physics 100 description of what is a Josephson junction. Josephson junction basically is a system where two superconductors are separated by something, an insulating, in this case an oxide layer, because the books from which I took it was an ITC book, or can be just there could be a constriction in a superconductor in some region. What happens is that as a result, when you put two superconductors merging, connected with an insulating or oxide layer ladder in between, you observe a characteristic current tension which has this typical shape. What is the phenomenon is the fact that you have a current even when you don't have any tension applied to the system, and that is the reason why Josephson, below some temperature obviously, and this is the reason why Josephson got a Nobel Prize for that. And so in this transparency center, just a brief summary of all the results which are well known for Josephson junction. In absence of an external field, you get a current through the junction, which has this form where phi 1 minus phi 2 is the difference between the phases of the superconducting order parameter at site 1 and at site 2 in the previous day. This quantity, the critical current DC, is something which depends upon the way in which you build the junction, therefore it depends upon the geometry, upon the length of the junction, and upon the material of which the two superconductors are made, and the dependence upon the material comes through the superconducting gap, which is different, obviously, if you make the junction with niobium or aluminum. A squid is a superconducting quantum interference device. Is just a similar system in which you have a superconducting loop terminating with a Josephson junction. In this case, okay, the critical current through the junction can be controlled through the magnetic field passing through the superconducting loop by this relation. Phi zero is the flux unit, and phi over phi zero is the ratio between the flux trading the loop with respect to the unit flux phi zero. There is a typical expression regulating the dependence upon the critical current upon the temperature, which is due to Umbrico Fehrenbarg, and shows that really the critical temperature, the critical current depends on temperature, just like the superconducting gap depends on it. And this is another. Now, let me switch to part two. And here I have my bomb graph. Here is the backbone. I consider now a free hopping Hamiltonian, and the bosons are hopping along the sides of this inhomogeneous structure. IG is the adjacency matrix characterizing this graph. And okay, there is no need to recall that okay, the adjacency matrix is a matrix which has entry equal to 1 if two sides are connected by a link, and has entry 0 if two sides are not connected by a link. With this Hamiltonian, I get this discrete Schrödinger equation, which will give the energy spectrum of a particle hopping on a graph. Now, the energy spectrum for this kind of bundled graph has a very peculiar property. Let's compare it, for example, to fix the ideas with the spectrum of a line, okay, of a particle hopping on the line. The reason for this comparison is quite natural. I can look at the bomb graph as a decorated line. Okay? Now, if you have a particle hopping on a line, it is well known that you have only plane wave solution, which are in the gap between minus t and plus t, where t is the hopping parameter, which is defined here. If the structure is this one, in addition to this continuum between minus mt and plus t, you have a low energy state, which is localized around the backbone, and an infinity of other states, which are localized along the backbone and that are between the lowest energy in zero, let's say, up to the bottom of the continuum starting at T. So you have these localized states which appear in this structure and that are not present when you have bosons hopping on the line. You can solve exactly for the spectrum, and therefore you can compute exactly the partition function. If you compute exactly the partition function, you find that for bosons hopping on this structure, there is a critical temperature, which depends, okay, on T, basically. J is proportional to T, under which all bosons, a finite fraction of bosons is localized into these lowest energy states, and therefore it is localized around the backbone. In a way, this is, let's see, as I mentioned it before, this is a, one can look at it as an exception to the Mermin-Wagner theorem, stating that there is no condensation in V lesser than 2. But honestly, if one looks at the proof of the Mermin-Wagner-Poleman theorem, one sees that one of the ingredients is translational invariance. And translational invariance is explicitly broken in this system, so a priori there is no reason why this theorem should hold. However, from thermodynamics computation, one can find okay that there is a finite Tc below which a finite fraction of bosons occupy this lowest energy state. So this is a special condensation of bosons, and one can compute, for example, from once one knows partition function, one can compute all the thermodynamics, the number of bosons which are located far away from the backbone, below and above the critical temperature. And this computation shows that, okay, this ratio between the number of bosons far away from the backbone, below and above the critical temperature goes as T over Tc, and therefore far from the center, far from the backbone of the comb, the number of bosons decrease, and given the pictorial way of what can happen in a superconductor, one would expect that far away from the backbone, the critical current of the analog Josephson junction system will decrease, and while instead very near to the backbone, the critical current will be enhanced. Okay. One can build Josephson junction arrays on a comp network, and the prototype has been realized in Rome University by Paolo Silvestrini and Matteo Cirillo. And the design looks like this. This is our comp. Now, on each side, there is a superconducting grain of niobium, and so these blue dots, the blue squares, are superconducting grains of niobium. And between the two superconducting grains, there are junctions. Obviously, the fact that it's a comb means that I put the junction only along this line, but there is no junction connecting here, okay? Now, one can, with the specification according to which has been built this device, is the geometry of the junction is such that critical currents are of the order of 10 microamperes. We manage to control the capacitance effect between two different on the junctions, and we realize a system in which the capacitance effect is very small with respect to Josephson energy. And this is usually in the jargon of Josephson junction literature. This is called the classical regime of a Josephson network. So this system has been fabricated. This is the, let's say, a sketch of the ground state around the backbone. Now, what has been observed? It has been observed here, these four diagrams, which I will illustrate. Now, the diagrams, these upper diagrams, relate to what happens at a temperature of 4.2 K, and the lower two diagrams tell you what happens at a temperature of 1 plus 2 K. What is this temperature? This is a temperature at which, for sure, all the niobium grains are becoming superconducting. And here, what is plotted, the critical currents of the junction in this graph, the critical currents of the junction on the backbone of the comb, as compared, red line, to the critical currents of the junction of a straight line, of a linear chain, constructed with the same junction. You will see that practically the critical current is the same. Here, okay, is the same diagram, only that we are plotting the critical current of the junction on the comb. Okay? So at 4.2 K, there is really no difference between what is going on a comb and what is going on a linear chain. The critical currents are just the same. But then you lower the temperature and you go to 1.2 K. The two diagrams change this way. So here you will see an enhancement of the critical current of the junctions which are on the backbone, respect to the junctions of the linear chain made with the same junction, and a reduction of the critical current of the junctions which are on the fingers. And this effect is of the order of 15%, and therefore it's very big with respect to the usual error that you make in superconducting measurement. So it is a real effect that okay, has been also confirmed by, in this case, okay, these graphs refer to samples of 51 by 51 junction, but we did also with larger sample, and in effect, the graph, the pictures look the same. Now, what one can do a theory of this phenomenon? Yes, okay, so one can do a different level. I will put here a very phenomenological view. I will use basically the volume of the Jean-Mifield theory of superconducting. Here I have a comb, here I have a linear chain. I'm comparing the two systems. Let's say the reason for this is that are both one-dimensional system in the sense of the Euclidean dimension, and this one can be regarded as a decorated chain. Now, each site on the comb I will label with x and y, x being the position of the backbone and y being the position on the finger. The adjacency matrix in terms of x and y can be written in this form, while the adjacency matrix in the case of the inhomogeneous chain is obviously this one. And the spectrum of the quantum particles hopping on these two systems is ruled by this kind of equation. As I mentioned, okay, this spectrum, which one can find easily by diagonalizing the adjacency matrices, is very different. Because, okay, the spectrum of a particle hopping on a line is basically plane wave solutions, which in the continuum, the infinite continuum limit will be a continuum between minus t and plus t, while instead the spectrum of a particle hopping on this system will have a ground state, a lowest energy state, will be obviously bounded below, okay? And then we'll have a low energy state, which is localized around the backbone, and an infinite set of localized eigenstate, which will be between the energy E0 and the lowest energy of the continuum. Now, if one has to do a phenomenological theory of of the quasi-particles in superconductivity, quasi-particles are basically fermions, hopping on this system, one can resort to the Bogoliubov-Degen approach, which is a powerful self-consistent approach for superconducting devices, for superconducting systems. I have the system is described by a free Hamiltonian. This is the one particle Hamiltonian. Mu is the chemical potential, which for all purposes it is practically the Fermi energy. U0R is some kind of impurity potential, taking into effect into consideration some peculiarities of the lattice. And here is the four Fermi interaction, which is responsible of superconductivity. The Bogoliubov-Degen approach, basically, it is a Mirfield theory approach, which in effect split these four Fermi operators into the product of two pertinent operators, which are called UR and DR. DR is the pair potential, is related to the gap, is practically the combination psi R, the psi is the fermionic wave function, psi R with the spin up, and psi r which spin down. It is while ur is psi dagger r, psi r which spin. So one split this for Fermi interaction into a product of two-point interactions, getting in this way an effective Hamiltonian, and diagonalizes the effective Hamiltonian according to this scheme. This is the this is the equation coming from the effective Hamiltonian, which are called Bogoliubov-Degen equation, and those equations have to be solved with this consistency condition, which fixes the function delta r and u r in terms of the eigenfunctions of this system. This is the Fermi statistics for the. This is widely applied in almost all the superconducting material. For example, for a simple homogeneous superconductor, you have that all the system of equation is solved with this. This is the spectrum of energy. This is the plane wave solutions. These are the function uk and vk that I introduced before. And the self-consistency condition gives the well-known gap equation of a BCS superconductor, gap equation which practically say that all superconductivity effects are basically due to Fermi excitation nearby the Fermi surface within a range by this determined by the d-by frequency omega d. But this is in all textbooks, so when you have an homogeneous system, the self-consistency solution can be solved with by choosing U equal to zero, which is the external inhomogeneous potential, while instead, if the system is inhomogeneous, then U enters the play and enters practically by, in a way, renormalizing to the chemical potential and making it not really equal to the Fermi energy. Now, for a discrete structure, I can write the volume of the Bechet equation. The only thing that is needed, and the reasonable assumption for the Fermi field, I can write the fermionic wave function in a Wannier form, where phi I are essentially describing orbital of electrons on the site I. And by choosing this Wannier representation of the wave function and plugging them into the volume of the Bechet equation, basically I have this equation with the self-consistency condition expressed now in this form. Now, for a generic graph, the connectivity of the graph enter in these terms through the adjacency matrix. This is the let's say the lattice potential, this is the renormalized chemical potential, and the adjacency matrix information is here. So for a comb and a straight line, all the difference comes from this kinetic term, because okay, the spectrum of the adjacency matrix is very different in the two cases. And in fact, okay, for a straight line, one can solve the volume of the Bechet equation and get this expression for the superconducting order parameter, which is practically what is exactly expected from the PCS theory. So the approximation involved in the volume of the Bechet approach is very good. And so it shows this diagram, okay, shows the correct temperature dependence of the gap parameter, and the fact that at the critical temperature TC, this gap parameter, the gap is practically zero because the system is not anymore superconducting. When I solve the equation on a comb, then the per potential gets a contribution coming from the bound states which lie between the zero energy state and the continuum. This contribution exchange chain effect for a line, the gap, the per potential will be given only by this first term. When you have a decorated line, therefore a comb, there is this extra contribution coming from the peculiar spectral properties of the adjacency matrix. This contribution put into the formula for the critical current will give you a correction due to the inhomogeneity to the critical current that you expect on the platform. In this picture, that is why is the comparison. The upper line refers to the results for the comb, the lower line to the results for the line. So for the line, practically the experimental values, which are this between with the intervals, are exact. You see, for the line, okay, we have just a BCS superconductor set of things. For the comb, what our theoretical analysis, which is extrapolated by this continuous line, fits very well the low temperature data of the experiment, the first two. And then, okay, as we expected, in effect, because there is no temperature involved in what we computed, the higher temperature, okay, is a little, we are a little bit off. However, okay, in effect, the enhancement of the critical current of the backbone can be taken into account very well by standard volume of the Bechet approach to this superconductor. And it shows that all this phenomenon can be attributed to the spectrum of the adjacency matrix of this comb. Now, Let me look now at a different but yet related system, which is essentially a system in which I have, I have a Bose, I have an Hubbard-like model on which I have an inhomogeneous term. Inhomogeneous because this extra contribution, I make it proportional to the lattice sizes to this one. Now, this has been studied very widely in the literature about cold atomic lattices. When the inhomogeneity is zero, this describes, this is the prototype model of a Mott insulating Mott sphere free transition. When instead omega is different than zero, one gets that inside a super fluid phase, you can have Mott domains, and there are also some changes in the universal properties of this phase transition. A similar situation we realize, for example, with an Ising model in an external magnetic field, where now you take the external magnetic field inhomogeneous, like just with parabolic dependence. Just beam field theory will evidence that, okay, you can have in this case disordered central domains and in unordered bulk. Just I will flash, this is the mean field theory analysis. EC is the critical distance from the center on which you discriminate between order and disorder. Now, this we did with an external magnetic field. Can you do it just by engineering the inhomogeneity of the lattice? Yes, Che, is an old problem. In effect, if you introduce diagonal in a Ising model, if you introduce diagonal interaction already in the 70s, Larkin and Ovchinnikov noticed the emergence and the possibility of local phases. Here, for example, okay, we consider, one may consider a spherical model. Sorry, here is missed the adjacency matrix. All the computation which is summarized in this slide refers to the star-shaped lattice. It can be generalized also to higher dimensional. What you find that because of the spectrum, okay, and I will be very flash now because I'm running out of time, because of the peculiar spectrum arising on these graphs, then okay, there is a critical temperature below which the local magnetization on the center in the case of the star or on the backbone in the case of the book is different than zero over distances with an exponential dependence upon the distance from the center, which means that far away, obviously, from the center of the star, this magnetization is zero. This local appearance of a magnetization is compatible with the fact that below and above T star, the global magnetization in this system is always zero for any finite temperature. As you see, this formula for the critical temperature reproduces in obtained in the case of the star, reproduces the fact that for P being the number of arcs of the star, when P equals to 2, and therefore I have one line, this critical temperature is just zero, like it should be on basis of the general arguments. Similar analysis one can carry for Ising models, in this case on the book. Here, for example, in these first two lines are a correlation. I report only results on numerical simulations. Here you have correlators along the backbones, and here on the other lines you have correlators between one point on the backbone and one point on the fingers. You see that these correlators, okay, exhibit some tendency to long-range order on the backbone, while instead, okay, on the bulk, there is disorder. This is a phenomenon which, honestly, deserves more explanation than this, but it's possible. And now, the last part I want to see is, for example, let's think about this inhomogeneous network, and let me consider a network with 10S sites. And on this network, let me consider that let me put NP fermions. The Hopping Hamiltonian is described for fermionic system in this form with anti-commutation relations satisfied. The eigenvectors are again given by this kind of Schrödinger equation. And once I introduce this this particle delta gamma, I can write the Hopping Hamiltonian, let's say, in this form, which is a generalization of what usually do for translational invariant system, also in this case. Now, let me consider now a subnetwork with L sites. And so ENG is smaller now, the size of the subnetwork. And let me want to compute the entropy of this subnetwork with respect to the lattice. This entropy is usually as this expression. I define the ground state to the usual Dirac prescription, and the entropy is computable by means of this formula, where chi gamma is the matrix of the L eigenvalues of the subnetwork G prime correlation matrix, which is defined this way. Chi and Chj are creation and annihilation operator of fermions, and psi is the state which has been constructed this way. Now, results of numerical simulation, consider a comb. And as subsets G prime, let's consider these four subsets. Then, okay, for each one of these subsets, we have a different scaling, let's say, of the entropy with distance. For this one, you have the usual scale, the usual thing you expect for a linear chain with no impurity. While for this block D, which is this, you have, let's say, this subset crosses the backbone, so process one point where you have coordination number four, and this factor is reflected in this change of the coefficient of the prefactor of logarithm L, which is quite typical, let's say, for inhomogeneous system, for systems for chains with impurity. In effect, this you get this C effect. What we find so far interesting and puzzling is the fact that you can get different scaling behavior depending upon the subset you choose in this structure. So this is what I wanted to say, and I thank you for your attention. And let's say the last thing is what I had, and that is my motivation, let's say, for me to come to listen to this workshop, because the perspective, okay, the first we are analyzing in detail this part, and then, okay, we are trying to have an analytic understanding of the results of the Ising model on inhomogeneous networks, and so far this is work in progress. And okay, for quantum information devices, I'm looking for inspiration to your talks, because essentially there, okay, I'm puzzled by this kind of entanglement properties, which seem to be evidenced by numerical simulation of this system. Thank you very much.
So, have you looked at the atomic distribution for other kinds of network topologies? You know, because the comb is sort of is useful for the superfluid phase, right? When you need to, when you need to have some kind of breaking translation invariance,
to have a local superfluid.
But free fermions, you don't care, right? So,
free fermions was just a simplest exercise. We did it also for stars, star forms, and book graphs. And in effect, what would be more interesting to do it for spin models, what we are really trying to understand at the moment, for which we are only looking at the stars.
There aren't any questions. Let's thank all speakers in the afternoon. Thank you.